Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Game on once again. This time it's the outside line. Oh, they make contact. He's got a puncher. He's damaged his front wing. The leading contenders for the World Championship come together at turn three. The crowd can't believe it. And George Russell will be looking at the gap. He's the man in third after Verstappen and Norris come together chasing the lead.
George, you can win this. You can win this, George.
Just have a drive.
Yeah. And for just the second time in Formula One, the British driver will see the flag first, and George Russell wins an amazing Austrian Grand Prix. He beats Oscar Piastri home by 1.9 seconds. Carlos Sainz is back on the podium for the first time since Monaco.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we are back to review the 11th race of the Formula One 2024 season, the Austrian Grand Prix. And, well, what a banger. So, to do this, I am joined by Ellie Mae Taylor. How are you? And let's keep this sort of PG friendly.
I'm good, thank you. Stayed relatively calm, actually, during the Grand Prix. There was no sort of heightened heart rate or blood pressure or anything like that. Football, however, that was...
It was sort of heart rate at sort of nothing for sort of nearly 90 minutes, and then it sort of went through the roof.
Well, the thing is I put the recliner down on the chair. I was ready to go and wash my hair. And then at the 95th minute, Jude Bellingham scores, and I'm like, well, I'll put the recliner back up then and sit back in my chair.
Yeah, fantastic overhead bicycle kick, and away he goes. But that is by the by. We ought to really dive into the Austrian Grand Prix weekend and the multitude of exciting things that have actually happened. And we'll kick off with some news, and it stems from the Alpine garage. Funnily enough, I was actually overtaken by someone from Alpine on my drive home this evening. It looked like one of their vans that's converted to be a little mobile office, because the back is clearly full of seats, but it was very dark windows. So I don't know if that was a Bruno Fama or a Flavio Briatore holding meetings, but someone was very carefully chauffeuring them along the M1. Regardless, Alpine have extended Pierre Gasly's contract, and it is regarded as being multi-year. We don't know the full details of the length of it. We don't quite know what multi-year means. Sometimes it's 2+ something or 1+ something, but we'll wait and see. And he's, weirdly enough, one of the few drivers I haven't been weirdly speculating on about securing a seat. And equally, do we think this was sort of driven by Ocon leaving the team?
Ultimately, no, I don't think so. Because I think if Gasly was doing a bad job, or if they didn't want him, I don't think they'd have him. I don't think they're the kind of team that think, well, at least if we've got one that gives us one of the same driver, that gives us the stability we need. I think Gasly's done enough on his own to keep him there.
But more from Gasly signing it, not necessarily being given the offer, but sort of signing the deal, because obviously the relationship between those two drivers, despite Alpine's sort of best attempts at sort of placating it, seems to have been pretty fracturous, especially post Monaco. Do we think now Gasly knows that he's not going to be sort of directly rivaled, and certainly not kamikazed on track from time to time? He's got a bit more confidence in what he can do with the team.
Maybe. I mean, it's not like it's a sudden change of character from Ocon, I don't think. And they didn't get on anyway. So I think if that was always sort of going to be a factor, I don't think he would have joined
True.
the team.
In the would have joined in the first place. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think he would have stayed regardless, more so because I'm not sure where else he would.
What his other options were.
Yeah.
One of his other options certainly isn't now, at least. The second seat at Aston Martin, unsurprisingly, Lance Stroll has been confirmed at the team going into a new era, which sort of suggests it's a 2-year contract going into the new era, at least 2026. This would see his career reach 9 years by the time of his next renewal, which is quite a long contract for someone who's not achieved
Not
a great
done
deal.
much, no.
No.
But at the same time, it's not unsurprising, is it?
No, it's a make work job at your dad's company. Unfortunately, the make work job is also F1 driver. But yeah, it's not truly surprising. But at the same time, especially at a time when Aston Martin is slipping back down the grid, it's getting trickier and trickier to tell good performance from bad in a chassis that is clearly struggling. There's a lot to unpick with certainly Stroll's tenure at that team.
Yeah, there is also that. It's at the minute, it's his performance is masked by
A car that's just dire.
yeah, pretty much. I was gonna try and word
Think
it.
there's no way of mincing the words about it. It's not so it's not a critic of Stroll's performance. It's just a case of even Alonso this weekend struggles to get anything from that car. And I know we'll get to them when we get to like the team performance reviews. We'll move on to the next news point, which is we mentioned in the preview that Max has now exhausted his power unit allocation, and it's expected he'll take a 10-place grid penalty in Spa as he'll add a new one to the pool. There were slight issues again for him with the engine cutting out, and I think it was the practice section. Correct me if I'm wrong on that one. And then in the Grand Prix, he was told to avoid shifting into eighth on the straights against the weight of the fully fueled car early on. There wasn't the power load to keep the car really motoring along properly. It was starting to bog down a bit. So are we starting to see a problem emerging for these Red Bull power units? Is this something that's going to grow as an issue going forwards?
I think in practice it was an issue with the software, wasn't it? More than a reliability issue with the actual mechanics of the car. So I
Hmm.
don't think that's too much to worry about. In terms of avoiding eighth gear, whilst I think that sort of implies that there is kind of an issue there, I think sometimes if the driver isn't going to be in eighth gear for too long, teams will often tell the driver just stick to seventh, but I'm not 100% on that.
It seemed like it was something that they'd sort of asked him to sort of avoid for a bit. So it might be transmission issue as well as it might be an engine thing, but it's just one of those things you don't expect to start hearing from Red Bull as a unit. Maybe sort of communication within the team, directives, or mechanics. There's something that's a little bit afoot in this, and we'll get into that again as we sort of get into the actual race review. Interesting though, this is.
You would think it's weird if they do now sort of have, I guess last, because I'm thinking sort of comparing it to last year and thinking nothing's fundamentally changed in terms of
The
the
mechanics of
mechanics,
the car, a little bit of the cooling and
but
everything, yeah. But
I guess it's might be because the Red Bull was so dominant they were allowed to cruise more, whilst now they're having to push, which may now be putting more of a strain on.
week in, week out, the car is facing more of a battle, whereas last year it was sort of run able to run sort of figuratively at 9/10ths a lot more of the time. But we'll move into sort of a quick look at how this has left the championship order. And well, this is the first time this season we haven't seen the drivers' championship order of the top 10 change. And while this sounds like a complaint, it's actually quite a positive thing. And often through the past few years, we've seen completely stagnant fields. Last year, it took until Spain, the seventh round, seventh contested round, because obviously we had Imola skipped, to get a stagnant field, and until Singapore to see the top three change. This year, the top three has changed order 7 times, admittedly with Max always leading, but the fight beneath him and the championship that's bubbled away has actually been genuinely very impressive. Further out in the championship order, Haas leap ahead of Alpine, a really strong run and double points from Hulkenberg and Magnussen, doing them well this weekend. Hulkenberg now overtakes Behrmann and Ricciardo in the drivers to take 12th, and Magnussen passes Ocon and Albon for 16th. Hulk is now 3 points shy of Stroll and five from Tsunoda, which would put him in the top 10, which is a pretty sound performance for a Haas. So I think, sort of big picture, we're still in the midst of a very entertaining championship year.
I never doubted Hulkenberg.
You never do, and I appreciate that. We'll jump then into, yeah, I think I don't want to dive too deeply into the Verstappen senior Mercedes sort of debacle just yet. I want a few more facts before I jump into that one, but it is on my radar. I'm keeping my ear to the ground for Gossip Corner. So we'll jump into the Grand Prix weekend and the actual on-track action, and we'll start, as we always do, with Red Bull at the top of the championship at the moment. And I'll jump right in with the big bit. I feel Max deserves more of a penalty after that collision with Norris, and essentially he got away from that scot-free. If that was a Grosjean, a Magnussen, a Mazepin, I think we'd be looking at a grid drop or maybe even a race ban. I think a race ban was a bit of a big one, but certainly a grid drop for the next race. It was a big double move. And I think he's regressed a little bit. We haven't seen a Max this aggressive in some time. So clearly the pressure of this championship is getting to him and pushing a different aspect of his driving. When it comes to Perez, Max did a whole lap on three tyres and still finished ahead of him. So not exactly a shining weekend for the number 11 car. Meanwhile, Perez was locked in a battle against the Haas cars pretty much all race long. Qualifying was good, but he still can't race against the field he's in either. In the sprint, really solid drive from Max and metered battling to position not Piastri and Norris behind him. But I think my big question is, while I'm annoyed that they haven't penalised Max based on the outcome, which is fair, that opens up a whole can of worms, should Max and Lando have been penalised earlier? We saw Lando overstepping track limits and should he have earned a penalty a little earlier? At the same time, Max deserved one too for moving while under braking. It's likely that you could have given both a 5-second penalty, and it might have changed the dynamics of the battle. Equally, you can ask whether the team cost him this. Was that slow stop that brought Lando into touching distance the catalyst that triggered all of this? Is this the mounting pressure starting showing Red Bull as a whole? I think this unearths for me a lot of questions this weekend.
I mean, if you look at the events leading up to their collision, we obviously start off with a bad pit stop from Red Bull as one of the mechanics struggled to get the rear wheel nut off, which negates Max's 9-second lead over Lando. Red Bull obviously then put a used set of mediums on against Lando's fresh, who pitted on the same lap. So now, not only is he caught up, he's going to be faster. So Red Bull dropped the ball here, and they did put themselves in a compromised position in terms of not having a new set of mediums to hand and the slow stop, which then brought Lando into touching distance. Whereas I'll say McLaren essentially did everything right. Maybe I'd have gambled and pitted Lando one or two laps earlier, because then he may have got the undercut on Max, or if Max came out at the same time as Lando going up the hill, Lando has fresher and warmer tyres against Max's, who is used and cold. So Lando would have probably got Max going up to turn three, and he wouldn't have had an answer to their pace. But it's easier, obviously, to say what they should have done now in hindsight, as they weren't to know Red Bull were going to fluff up their pit stop. I think, obviously, get back to sort of them going on track. Lando was faster here, and he caught Max quickly, and that's obviously where things got heated and the fun and games began as Lando tried to overtake Max. Do I feel that before the collision, one driver was sort of blamed more than other? No, I think they were as bad as each other. Lando was sort of going for overtakes that I don't think he could quite make. They were a little bit too aggressive, and they just weren't going to work, and Max was defending a bit too hard and on the limit, so they were then both annoying each other and just getting more frustrated and heated in the moment. I think then at that point, because Lando's on he's now crossed track limits too many times, he's got that 5-second penalty. I think before that, perhaps Lando's engineer should have been on the radio to him. I'm not 100% sure whether you can say this to them, but I'd be saying, like, look, you're faster than him, but you need to calm down and think about how you're actually going to overtake him. Keep a cool head. Crucially, charge your battery up and continue getting closer and closer to him until you know for certain that you can make that overtake stick and that's within track limits and isn't a dive that then forces Max off the track either. So then it's not a question of whether you need to then give that back. If he, and, you know, if Max keeps moving under the braking, the stewards should be picking this up and at least giving Max a black and white flag initially to warn him. And then if he obviously he doesn't listen, then he gets the penalty. And on the other side of things, if I was Max's engineer, I'd equally be telling him to remain calm. And I'd be telling Max that, you know, Lando's got a 5-second penalty for track limits. That was a given. So don't do anything stupid. If he is quicker, he's got to then have to get 5 seconds ahead of us. I don't think with the laps that they had, he would have been able to get 5 seconds ahead. So Max would have still won. I know Max probably wouldn't have taken that well because he wants to finish ahead on track. But in terms of then, I guess, the contact between the two, I would say that's Max's fault. The car, you know, there was a car's width for Lando until there wasn't because Max squeezed him. So I guess, I think perhaps, well, we don't know, or I haven't sort of seen whether GP or is it Tom that does it first?
Tom Stallard? No, or is it Will?
Will Jones?
No, Will retired, isn't it? It might be, I know Tom Stallard is Oscars. I don't know who Lando has these days. He used to have Will. Might still be Will Joseph, either way.
I think, well, yeah, if I was GP, I'd be telling Max he's got a 5-second penalty now.
Mm.
You know, calm down, don't do anything stupid. Even if the stewards haven't given that yet, because it was a given, it's just a slam dunk. I know that the last track limits he made was trying to do an overtake on Max. And was it the same one that forced Max off the track as well or not? Was that different again?
I think it was maybe one where it might have been the one round where he tried to go around the outside the first time and found himself over the track limits. And that was what had been sort of counted as his final infraction. So it's, yeah, I think there was, I want to know what the communication was between the sort of driver engineers and the drivers in those moments. And I think you're right in saying there ought to have been that coaching. You are allowed to coach your drivers to a certain extent. And we certainly saw that with Norris, famously 2020 last lap Lando. You're allowed to have that sort of coaching, that instruction, that sort of guidance of sort of deploying this and using this here and there. And I don't think there's anything against the rules saying sort of calm down, keep your head. These are the facts surrounding you. So overall, I think, yeah, maybe if there'd been that communication, it might have had a slightly different outcome, which, yeah, changes the whole circumstance. But yeah, I think overall, if we're going to apportion blame, I think for me, it still rests with Max. If you look at, I think it was Ant did a really good job with the Skypad of playing back not only all of Norris's attempts, but also previous races and previous drivers' attempts around that same turn under similar circumstances. And then he shows the final move, the one that sort of led to the collision. And you see that there is that gap. He measures it out with the sort of camera angle. And then as it progresses, as you wind it forward by the frames, that gap closes and Max tries to shut the door on him around the outside.
You see him shut the door on him, definitely. Yeah. There's no doubt about it that that was Max's fault. The issue is then going back to like the communication with the team, you know, the moving under braking and things like that. Red Bull never thought that they were in the wrong. So then how do you then go about it? It then has to sort of almost go to the stewards to be like, look, pack it in. You can fight hard, but fight fair.
Yeah, I think this is where the stewards, and you've done a fairly good job all weekend long, to be fair. They were pretty on it when it came to sort of dishing out penalties and things through the race. We saw that with pit entry for, I want to say, Hamilton and maybe also another driver. I can't remember off the top of my head. So they were on it, and they were really sort of focused on bringing down a fairly clear line. I think Johnny Herbert had a busy weekend as the driver steward, but he was doing well. And I don't think this weekend there was any of the sentiment that it would have been questioned or debated. I think if it had come from the steward's office pretty sharpish, it would have sort of dealt with things fairly early on. It might have been one of those things that sort of investigated after the race, just in those sort of minutes where they sort of almost stalled the drivers with the cool down room just to go, no, are we sure? Okay, change of plan. That would have been an interesting cool down room to see if it had been Max and Norris swapping places potentially either way. But yeah, I think it's a great summation of the fact that there is a big fight that is brewing, and the pace of the McLaren and the Red Bull are getting closer and closer weekend after weekend, and we're seeing two drivers really have to find a new level.
I almost hope that now it's almost like what Sainz said, it was inevitably going to happen. And I hope now that it has happened, we can now just have clean, harsh, but fair battling. I'd hope at least, even if Red Bull don't see that they've done any wrong or McLaren don't see what they've done any wrong, the stewards or the FIA or someone like that sit them down and say, look, we'll let you fight, but there's a limit here.
Yeah, there is a ceiling. I think it's a great time to move into sort of discussing McLaren then. I think this weekend, really good pace. The strategy of keeping those fresh mediums paid off, as you mentioned, and Piastri needed a few more laps to pressure George. I think had it played out a bit differently, we might have sort of seen your prediction of this being a Piastri win come true, sort of fortuitously. As a team, though, really good drive and a shame for Lando. Piastri is now just 1 point clear of George Russell. A fun battle starting up there as well. Piastri is doing well in the sprint too. I mean, can't fault him there. When it comes to Norris, however, overall, I'm a little worried. I feel he's an overthinker, and certainly over sprint weekends, where there's a lot to process and a lot of chances where you can go, what if? I feel that coupled with the mounting challenge of a title really adds to it. And I'm hoping there's support in the team to look out for him and crucially his mental health as this sort of builds and develops. He's got the confidence and the skill on track. But I don't want it coming undone at the hands of a lack of support just for the sort of cerebral matters of just keeping him built up properly. Overall, though, the McLaren is shaping up to be a really good car this season. It struggles on a full fuel load, interestingly. We definitely saw that in the opening stages of the Grand Prix. Against the Red Bull, the McLaren is a bit trickier to launch and a bit trickier to be as precise with. But as the fuel burns off, as it settles in, it really comes into its own. And that was really pressed home this weekend with the fresh mediums for Norris at the final stint. I think there's a really good development in that car. And I think what we see them do with it next year is going to be crucial. I think if Norris isn't able to chase down Verstappen this year, next year, as McLaren just put the final tweaks to that car, we could see something absolutely phenomenal.
I was so close to my Piastri win. It's almost teasing me. I mean, if it wasn't for track limits at turn nine, non qualifying, but overall they were quick, and I think that bodes very well for circuits to come. And Piastri, if it wasn't for the track limits infringement, he would have been there to pick up the pieces. If Lando sort of fumbled it or something like that, we saw that sort of in the sprint a bit. In terms of Lando's mental health, I agree. It's kind of what we were saying a couple of weeks ago with George. He needs assistance in sort of to help him break down what's going on when battling up for higher positions, and then how to cope better in those scenarios. If he wants to obviously win a championship, especially if it's against Max, he needs to keep a cool head and just be able to look at the bigger picture. The best drivers aren't just quick. They can also strategically think under pressure, and that's obviously no easy feat, but it's kind of what Lando needs to sort of do here a bit more. I think he needs to sometimes learn how to bide his time and be patient a little bit and know that the race will eventually come to him.
Yeah, it's no good sort of trying to rush it. I think George's and Lando's sort of mental approaches are similar in that I think there's definitely a case of worth sort of coaching both of them, but I think it's different trigger points that are sort of leading to them. But there's definitely a sort of valid reason to sort of keep an eye on both of them and hopefully sort of talk them through it. But yeah, I think overall for McLaren, this is looking exceptionally exciting, and I can't wait to see what happens. Meanwhile, further down the grid, Ferrari, and for me, this was quite a mediocre weekend for the Scuderia. Leclerc was unlucky with that early collision. Three F1 cars do not go into that turn. We were sort of seeing F2 and F3 cars struggling to go three wide into that turn. Although at points they were trying four wide, which was quite bold. But yeah, with Sainz, it was actually a really solid drive for him, and it paid dividends at the end of it. He's keeping a good points gap to the drivers around him in the standings, putting on a really good show. And again, if the alleged rumors of Verstappen to Mercedes are true, that opens up a Red Bull seat. And I think Sainz against Perez, I think Sainz would have the upper hand and could look like a really tasty driver after that point. I mean, he said this weekend that he's sort of relishing getting these po final podiums because he doesn't believe they'll be coming next year. So maybe he's not looking at sort of potentially snaffling a Red Bull, but overall, mediocre Ferrari.
It's another almost another case where Red Bull fumbled by letting Carlos go. He always had that, well, I think he always had that talent in him. I think it was just unfortunate that he came around the same similar time as Max.
Quite literally
And
the same time.
yeah. So obviously they favoured him, and Carlos thought, well, I'll go to Renault, and then carried on sort of moving off. You know, if they had sort of, even if, like, you know, when Ricciardo left, I think Sainz and Verstappen would have made it quite a good match there as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of this week, Leclerc, bless him, he's just run out of luck ever since Monaco. It just, you know, that poor guy.
He saved it all up, spaffed it on his home race. And yeah, it was great to see, but it's just not been there for him. And this weekend certainly wasn't through any fault of his own either. I think
No.
what was interesting was the team saying, oh no, we still think points are doable. They're like, bro, you're fighting on Williams and struggling to get through the field. You're going to make it to the points? And he did on some occasions. He was right up there, and then they'd had to pit him again because he was on like a quadrillion pit stop strategy.
I think that might have been sort of a way of trying to keep his hopes up, maybe.
Keep his head up, keep him motivated, keep him pushing. Yeah. And also just keep him running so they have him as like a tire testing station to know what to expect for Sainz as well, up further up the field, just sort of going, okay, we've sort of put him on these hards so many laps ago, and they've already done, ooh, okay, we know what to do with Sainz then. It was sort of he was their mobile lab at that point, I think.
I mean, they Ferrari lacked the pace to be in the real mix of things, but you know, Sainz did well with what he had, and he ultimately put himself in a good position to then end up being, you know, getting that podium when Max and Lando crashed. So I don't think there was any much more that he could have done, really.
Meanwhile, the team that very much sort of jumped them pace-wise, Mercedes, again, I've never been a big Mercedes fan, but it's lovely to see them coming good and adding more pressure to the front. Great drive from both of their drivers. I can understand the Lewis pit entry penalty, though a little harsh. I think there is, it's a white line, it's clear cut, it's black and white, ironically, but yeah, George was pretty peerless, I have to say, this weekend. It was a very quiet race for him in P3 for a while, but then as soon as that gap opened, he just sort of extended a bit into it, made it harder for Piastri to chase him down. Overall, though, their pace is really on it against the McLarens and the Red Bulls. I don't think it's quite the sort of finished article, that car. And maybe next year it will be a three car sort of championship shootout from the off, and it will be interesting to see what George does. We've seen him certainly this season start sort of not schooling Hamilton, but being able to go really clinically toe to toe with him and provide some really interesting results. And if you're a driver that's able to do that and come out shining in a positive sense, I'm getting a bit of Nico Rosberg from him. I'm getting a bit of there's a championship in this boy somewhere. We've just got to find it. And that to me is quite tempting.
Just got to fine-tune him, basically.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, I think the Hamilton penalty, I think on the outside kind of looks harsh, but at the same time, it is one of those slam dunk things that you need to be in control of your car. You know, were you sliding because you were going too fast? Do you need, you know, that is that why you stepped out? But
Yeah, the
yeah,
penalty's there.
car.
It's there for safety. And ultimately, if you're not driving your car in ironically, in a safe Accord, which is strange to say about a Formula One race, that's where penalties start coming from. And the same as you could say the same about why there's the moving and the braking thing, which is ironically something that was brought in to deal with Max Verstappen's overtaking maneuvers. Ultimately, it was something again that started to catch him out this weekend.
But going back to Mercedes, yeah, it's like you said, they're getting better and better as the season goes on. I think we can safely say they've turned a corner now, and I think they are on the right trajectory with these regulations. And yeah, George was ultimately there to pick up the pieces and you know, win. And he had put him in himself in a good enough position that he was about 5 seconds ahead of Sainz anyway, so that then when Piastri was closing in then on Sainz, got the overtake on Sainz soon after the collision, it was enough of a gap that Piastri couldn't catch him, and he could win that pretty comfortably.
Yeah, it's a good drive, really, from Russell. And I think overall for Mercedes, they're finding their feet again. And it's great seeing the rest of the team energized and excited about going Formula One racing. Certainly, Toto Wolff sort of apologizing a bit for jumping on the radio, going, "Come on, George, we can do this." And then sort of going, "Oh shit, sorry, I shouldn't have jumped on right when you were sort of doing heavy braking into turn three post an accident where it's littered with carbon fiber." But yeah, I think seeing a team that has become so re-energized and rebuilt by it is really quite it's quite a nice thing. It's one of those things you love to see about
It's
F1 is you love to see your silly little guys really enjoying their sport.
nice to see. Nice to see the passion.
On the other side of that passion coin, unfortunately, the list now turns to Aston Martin. I've really only written six words, which is abysmal, really. Where's the pace gone? And I think that sums it up. They've brought along a load of upgrades. They don't understand how they work. They're clearly not giving them the results they expected. And to make things worse, the field around them has, well, the field they're originally in, the top end of the field, has left them behind. And even the mid pack is now leaving them for dust. It's not good.
It hasn't been an ideal situation at Aston Martin for a while now, but it ultimately hasn't come as a shock to them. They knew they were going to struggle these past few weekends, and that they're sort of currently in that lull. But then it's like, where do you go from there? If you knew that you're going to struggle, how do you then come out of it?
Yeah, have they got the sort of procedure in place to be able to dig their way out of this problem they found themselves in? And this is going to be the really sort of testing thing if you're looking to try and hire an Adrian Newey. He's the sort of person that's going to be looking at the function of a team and a team that's able to sort of rectify problems that come along. Because obviously I think Adrian Newey is smart enough to understand that he is not without fault at times and appreciates that occasionally things might not go exactly as planned on the racetrack. So that coupled with the fact that they also announced this weekend or possibly last that their wind tunnel won't be coming online for a little bit longer still, it's problem after problem is starting to compound for them.
But then you've also got to think, Aston Martin were able to turn it around a
Miraculously
while
going into last season, yeah.
back. Hopefully that means they can do it again.
They've done it once, they can do it again. We'll wait and see. Speaking of turning it around, Minardi, and this was a bit of an average weekend for them by, or RB Racing Bulls, but this is a bit of an average weekend by their current measure, I think. Certainly getting there, but the pickup of pace from Alpine and Haas has made the tail end of the points a tough spot to fight for. I think any wins, any sort of pickups and performance here are really hard to sort of detect on sort of the face of it. Decent work from Danny Ric. It'd be interesting to see what he's able to pull out in Silverstone as he's touting that's going to be his big weekend of sort of staking his name to a seat for next season. We know Tsunoda is already confirmed, but who's going to be next to Tsunoda? Danny Ricciardo has sort of in previous releases said, if I can do something big at Silverstone, we'll see. And I think Silverstone is a circuit he likes. It's fast, it's flowing, it's one he can really sort of make some overtakes on. It's got the opportunity for late braking going into things like sort of Loughfield and Copse. So We'll see what he does, but yeah, this weekend was decent for them.
It was definitely a better weekend than Barcelona, that's for sure. I think Ricciardo again was the slightly stronger and more comfortable driver, which obviously then got him the points finish. He couldn't quite catch Magnussen, but whenever I sort of saw him on screen, it seemed like he's pretty much having to sort of constantly defend his position from someone. So he was more sort of looking behind him rather than in front of him. But yeah, hopefully the team is starting to understand their upgrades that they've just brought. And yeah, like you said, they can carry that into Silverstone. And I don't know.
See
maybe
what
Danny
they do.
Maybe no, maybe he'll win it. Let's.
Stranger things have happened in this sport.
Exactly.
Turn then to Williams, and the pace was a little bit better here, but I think the problem for them, a bit like Aston Martin, is the fight has moved on. You look at the start of their season, they were scrapping against the Alpines and the RBs, but the Alpines and the RBs have stepped forwards, and Williams haven't quite. They've brought along the upgrades, they've made the modifications, but it's too small a step, too rare this season as well. It's not enough all at once.
All I've put for Williams, to be honest, is a polite round of applause for Logan Sargeant's sprint qualifying.
Really, really good sprint qualifying.
Yeah.
So out-qualified Danny Ric and the other RBs. So yeah, quite a good little turn of pace. I think, again, it's showing signs that they're starting to understand the car. I think Austria is a tricky one to try and learn a lot from your car, because it's A, such a short lap, and also it's at altitude. So you're not getting truly accurate readings from your aerodynamics and your pressure sensors down the car. It's a hard one to try and get a read on, especially if it's hot as well.
No, but then at the same time, because you're doing so many, where it's such a short circuit, because you're doing so many laps, you get a lot of information that way.
Yeah, you do get a lot of repeated data. So it's, yeah, swings and roundabouts, but it's not truly comparative to anything else on the calendar, really, which is why I quite like Austria. It's very much a standalone circuit. I think the only thing that was really close to it would have been when we did the outer loop at Bahrain, which was a very quick lap. And had it sort of tight, twisty sections and big straights, but didn't have the elevation changes and didn't have the initial height either. Anyway, from Williams to Stake, Sauber, once Alfa Romeo, going to be Audi. Pit stops are better. The pace, however, is still a long way from approaching what they need to get anything. Only team in the field yet to score points. It's such an uphill battle trying to enjoy them this season.
It is. And I don't think it really helps that we don't really, I think because they're not doing much on track, we don't see much of them on the weekend either to know how they really went, to know sort of whether they are doing better or not. But, you know, all I kind of remember of them of this weekend is poor Joe being punted by Alonso. So.
Yeah, which, considering those two sort of famously going fairly well off track, was a bit of an odd one. But yeah, that was a strange move. But yeah, a tricky one to get a full read on for Stake. So we'll move on then to the very positive grounds of Haas. And it's getting fun trying to enjoy Haas this season, actually. Double points and a brilliant drive from Nico. He is still amazing me every weekend so far, what he's extracting from that car. And showed up Perez massively this weekend. I think he's possibly ruining maybe signing that Sauber seat a little early. There might have been a better option that could have floated his way if he'd stuck around a bit longer. And with these performances, I think it'd be daft not to sign him. He's at the top of his game at the moment.
It was an incredibly solid weekend for them. And I even said in the preview that I didn't think your wild prediction of Haas double points was wild, because I thought it was sort of obvious.
Yeah,
but,
because they've always gone well here. I just knew they were going to rock up and do something good. I just need them to follow it out for a while. So I say it was going to be Azerbaijan and Abu Dhabi. I said they were going to get double points at all the A-named races like they did for Australia. So,
but yeah, I mean, Nico struggled a little in the sprint qualifying, and, you know, was handed a, and the sprint, to be fair, he was handed a 10-second penalty for his sort of dive on Alonso, which I thought was a little harsh, as he did remain on track, but ultimately it did push Alonso off, and he subsequently lost two positions to Hülkenberg and Ricciardo. But the race itself, the entire team, I think, executed it very well. Both drivers drove exceptionally well. And, you know, their team called the strategy right, pitting them both early to get the undercut. And then both drivers were able to sort of manage their tyres well and maintain their pace really well. I think Yeah, Haas always seemed to go very well around this track, but it would be nice to see this momentum sort of keep
Carry on
going.
a bit more. Yeah. I think certainly when it came to getting their drivers to manage their tyres was a bit of an uphill battle. It seemed both of them really wanted to go hammer and tong and race it from the off. But
Yeah.
yeah, I think even for Kevin Magnussen, this was a good weekend. But I think he knows his time is up in the sport. I think he's looking elsewhere for seats, and there's going to be an announcement soon. I think we know Behrmann is basically moving into that seat. We the strong rumors that Ocon might be sitting next to Behrmann suggest that Magnussen is going. But again, if you listen to Ruth Buscombe's words about him across the weekend, she was absolutely glowing about him. And I think she said the right thing. He said he sort of knows his time is up. He's had a good time. He sort of finished his F1 career on a high with the team performing well and being able to show what he was capable of in a single seater. He can now head back off to IMSA or go and do WEC and just sort of have a nice retirement, inverted commas, with his family. And I think he's earned it. He's proved himself this weekend. And
He has done a lot for the team as well, really, when you think about how he's kept so many drivers behind him to make sure that Hülkenberg can be in the points. He has, sacrificed himself for the team a fair bit this year as well.
he's proven he can play the ultimate team game, and certainly against a driver who he had an initially frosty relationship with in Formula One. I think obviously maybe this weekend with Denmark, Germany, it might have been a little bit more of an interesting one, especially some of the refereeing calls on that pitch were a bit suspect. But yeah, otherwise really good weekend for Haas, and I know that Henry Haaschap is absolutely sort of bouncing off the walls. And rightly so, this was good from them. Which leaves us with one more team, Alpine. And for once, this was pretty decent for them again, actually. A decent pace through much of the race. The Chow Ocon line grates a little bit from Gasly. I think it was a little uncalled for.
Oh, it shows spice.
It shows
That
a
is
bit of
really.
spice, but if it was the other way around, Ocon would have been torn apart on social media for that one. You just know it. But
Passion.
I like the excitement of it. I like the fact that it's also a strange reference to Francesco Bernoulli from Cars 2 from Pierre Gasly. But yeah, it's yeah, overall pace was good, but the increased pressure from RB and Haas is making it really hard to shine. There's sort of only one spot left in that sort of top field, really, for them to try and sneak into. And I think it's going to be swings and roundabouts as to which one of the Alpines makes it.
I think, yeah, although it wasn't as good as a result as the past 2 weekends, they crucially weren't nowhere. It was still a good weekend for them, and they also showed how you can fight hard but clean and fair on the track too.
Yeah, they proved that they could definitely do that this weekend. I think Gasly, off the back of a contract signing, bagging another little point, just sort of keeping himself inching along, was pretty much what was needed at this point in time. It now puts him tied with Oli Bearman for points scored this season. So hopefully he'll work his way ahead of the F2 driver, who obviously after the results this weekend, he's tumbled down the order a bit in F1. Which now means he's on P14 in both F1 and F2, which is ironic.
I love watching like drivers finally catching him because he's only done the one race.
He's done the one race and essentially he sort of stayed pretty constant. It took a long time for
Yeah,
drivers to catch him because he got that wonderful
it
P7 in Saudi. So it's taken all the back markers so long to catch him, and then he's only now started to slip down the order. For ages he was P12, and I was sort of going, I
Yeah.
wonder how long that will stay. Like, maybe he'll get another F1 drive this season. We'll see. Anyway, teams and race recapped. We'll dive into our winners and spinners. We'll start off with our winners. And Ellie Mae, I think yours is pretty obvious.
Yeah, I've gone for Haas. Strong weekend for both of them, and it's a proper enemies to lovers trope between Magnussen and Hülkenberg, and I'm here for it.
We do indeed love that. Meanwhile, my winner is George Russell. I think he made a pretty solid drive. No mistakes while he was running sort of a clean and tidy race on his own in P3. And then when he was suddenly elevated to P1, he did just what he needed to do to keep the pack sort of neatly behind him, and a good finish. Yeah, kept his tyres in order and just all round pretty solid weekend from George. Flip side of that coin though, spinners. Oh. You've picked a tricky one for yourself personally.
I know it pains me to do, put him as my spinner, but Fernando Alonso. I mean, he just seemed uncomfortable in the car all weekend. He was slightly unfortunate with that lockup that then sort of punted Joe, but ultimately the pace just wasn't there either this weekend. It was just a bit torrid, really.
Was able to steal fastest lap on the sort of the end of it, but I don't know
Yeah.
why Aston Martin
They.
did that, because they stole it from Red Bull. It's not like
Yeah.
they're in a fight with Red Bull at the moment, so that was an
I
odd one.
did wonder that. Was it just like, yeah, I don't know. It's like, no, Max, you will not have that extra point, but we're not going to have it either.
Yeah, if you can't have it, but no one else can either. It's such a strange one. Meanwhile, my spinner is it's Perez, I'm afraid. How could you not overtake a Haas? And I was having this discussion actually while out for coffee at lunchtime with my girlfriend, and we've sort of come to the conclusion that Red Bull have only signed Perez, so they knew at least one person that was going to be in that Red Bull seat next year. I don't think Red Bull are confident they've got Max for much longer, and they just wanted Perez for a bit of consistency while they install a Daniel Ricciardo, Yuki Tsunoda, Liam Lawson, Carlos Sainz delete as appropriate. It's when you're sort of just the consistency option and not even that consistent, it's rough.
The kicker here is that Max was able to go around almost a whole lap with three tires,
Still
and
baffling Norris, I should point out. At one
yeah.
point, coming out of turn three, both of them now clearly suffering a puncture, both of them still absolutely hammering, tonguing each other into the grass. You're still going, the fight's over, guys. Your cars are broken.
No,
Meanwhile, Perez still
I.
not catching up. Verstappen able to pit stop, get fixed. And it's not an easy pit stop because the car's sitting low because you can't get the jacks under because one of the tires is punctured. Somehow still gets out ahead of Perez. He's like, oh, come on, man.
And gets a 10-second penalty and still finishes 17 seconds ahead.
Yeah, this was not a good looking weekend for
No.
Sergio Perez, and oh, it. Oh, I'm curious as to what he's going to do for the rest of the season because he can't keep up with these schlocky performances. He's tumbling down the field as it is. I mean, let's see what one of his championship positions has been the past few races. Fifth, 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 third, second, 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 third, second, second. So that goes back to Bahrain. He's just sort of flirted with second place, and then we got to Imola and it just started to tumble away. And points wise as well, it doesn't look any better. He's on 118 points. Russell's on 111, Piastri's on 112. And then you've got Verstappen 237, Sainz 135, Leclerc 150, Norris 156. Like the fight is running away from him, ahead of him. He's got a lot of work to do to catch up.
It's not going to take a lot for Piastri and Russell to get him.
Not if they keep consistently finishing ahead of him. I mean, we can have a quick look at average finish positions at the moment. And I can tell you that Russell, average finish position, 6.6, Piastri, 5.7, Perez, 6.8. So at the moment, on average, he's finishing behind them, scoring less points. That crossover point is going to happen. He's going to tumble down to sixth, seventh, possibly even eighth at the moment. Yeah, I think his only saving glory really is Hamilton has an average finish of 7.7, but after that, it is a long fall to the back. I mean, we'll discount Ollie Bearman, who's got an average finish position of seventh. So we'll wait and see there. Meanwhile, in our predictions, great weekend to be me. Only person scoring points with a Verstappen pole, a Sainz P3, and a Haas double points. So
If I didn't have to fan myself, I'd give you a polite round of applause.
yeah, I mean, Timo Leclerc pole, Perez Hamilton Leclerc podium, Sainz fastest lap, both Williams into Q3. No, I'm afraid not. Norris pole, you were close with that. I'll give you that one. Piastri win, close at times. Norris second, Verstappen third, Hamilton fastest lap, Perez top five. Perez couldn't even get it into the top five, man. Like,
No.
that is still a wild prediction.
I know, and I was I was there with my Norris second for a while as well.
Yeah, you would have been on for at least a point there, but
Yeah.
afraid not. I
No.
walk away from this weekend 3 points up, which means I now re-overtake the guest. I'm on 12 points. You're on 19. The guest is on 10, and Timo is on 3. So the predictions battle stays warm, as does the Fantasy F1 review. Best scorer this week, Timo, somehow, with On the Curb scoring 299 points, with Sainz, Piastri, Ricciardo, Hülkenberg, and Gasly, all his drivers finishing in the points in the Grand Prix. Ferrari and Mercedes' constructors do nicely to help. Doors by Günther Steiner in second, with What's the Racing Point in third, Trackside Hub number two in fourth, and My JB Racing in fifth. Timo also came bottom of the field, however, this week, with On the Curb's Pub Chat. Ellie Mae, your highest scoring team was P14, your podcast team.
See, I then, because I haven't really been looking at my F1 fantasy team, so I thought, well, I'll have a look today. My teams weren't bad, and so I'm like, why aren't you performing? So now I've changed one of my teams to make it more sort of mediocre, in the hope that then maybe that means I get more points, because it seems to be that a team that seems to be really strong isn't. So.
Yeah, bear in mind you do score negative points in this game, so yeah.
I know.
It's whether you
It's
sort of
like.
buy all the big drivers and then obviously have to balance it out with a few cheap ones that are likely to sort of detract from your team. It's a great strategy game. Anyway, overall, John Steeler dominates the top three now, with Take a Stroll, What's the Racing Point, and Doors by Gunther leading. My JB Racing team moves up to P9. Timo's On the Curbs moves up to 16th, and Ellie Mae's podcast team, that is your highest one, 20th.
Yeah, I suddenly plummeted when we got to the European races, and I'm like, yeah,
Just
I'll just.
wasn't going your way.
No, I don't know why. So, oh well.
Wait and see. See if we can fix it for the British Grand Prix. Anyway, that is surprisingly all we've got time for on this week's episode. A tight just under an hour. Surprised we've managed to do that. In the meantime, Ellie Mae, I'm going to tentatively ask whether people can find you.
Well, to be fair, actually, you can find me at an AC/DC concert, or you can find me down in Dorset because I'm going to see my friends.
Lovely. She's got things on her calendar. Whoop, whoop, whoop. AC/DC, where are you seeing them?
Wembley.
Lovely stuff. In the favorite AC/DC track?
Thunderstruck.
Top choice.
Yeah.
In the meantime, if you want more of me, you can find me, of course, writing for Classic Car Weekly. Our latest issue will be out the day after this podcast goes live. It's got our fresh coverage from the inaugural Interclub International Car Meet. Or you can find me on the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok as at Jesse on Cars. Or more likely this week, you'll actually find me in the garage working to put Bridget back together, because engine is pretty much finally put back together. I've just got to sort out the sump, fill it with oil, sort out the distributor, put it in the car, put the radiator back in, put the carburetors back on, put on all the cooling lines, water temperature gauge, oil pressure gauge, fuel lines, and then maybe it'll work. Maybe. We'll see. It's a big
Good
if.
luck.
I'm hoping to try and get it done before Friday morning, because then I've got to drive it down to a wedding for the weekend. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, that's all we've got time for this weekend. We'll, of course, be back with a preview for the British Grand Prix, which I don't think I'm doing because I'm dedicating the evening to garage work.
I'm at Wembley, so.
The British Grand Prix preview will be led by Timo, and I'm assuming someone else. Otherwise, enjoy half an hour of him talking to himself, and we'll be back for the British Grand Prix review.